The following is an arrival address by His Holiness Jayabhataka Swami on October 17, 1982 in Orlando, Florida.
Temple that has a lot of, many times devotees like to go to big temples, but anyway, small temple is very nice because it encourages everyone to take more and more of the responsibility to do different services. Where in a big temple, sometimes a few people can take on more load for the others, so some can gradually find ways in that early. Getting in the fire of service. That way we find that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he used to give assignments to different devotees. Not that every devotee had the same assignment. And different devotees had also different qualities. It wasn't that every devotee had the same quality. Rather, just the opposite we see that in Lord Chaitanya's associates, each devotee has got different qualities, just like Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami, they were the examples of humility, just like how they approached Lord Chaitanya, even though they were the prime minister of the Hussein Shah and the finance minister. At that time, they approached him with a straw, a piece of grass in their mouth, and from a distance they offered their obeisances. The Hussein Shah was the emperor of many, many kings, and they were more powerful than many kings, being completely in charge of the whole empire as his prime minister. They were there, although they may not have been a king in terms of the exact name, but in actual power, they were running the whole empire of, say, several hundred thousand people, 100 million people, which went say over about at least one third of what's India and Burma and Bangladesh today. So, but they approached Lord Chaitanya just like that in such a humble way. As Lord Chaitanya, so humble, it's the sign of a devotee. They didn't come, you know, like, here we are, the Prime Minister, we come to see you. Just like very humble. So they're the example of extreme humility. And like Raghunath Das, who of course was the son of, well, what we call a Jamindar in India would be maybe in European context like a count or earl, big landlord, who actually has his own army. It's like a miniature king. It's not actually a king. In other words, he's under a king. But he's, there they call Jamindar, but it's like an earl or something, like a count in the European context, actually. Nobility, like kind of a little less than a king. So he had all opulence and everything, every facility, but then he was so renounced. He used to live in the Radha Kunda, just, you know the story about how he was just eating the remnants thrown from the Jagannath Puri temple, and finally Lord Chaitanya, he finally came with just eating even the chunks of rice after they were rotten. And no animals would eat them. Then he would take, break them open and take the good part from the center and eat that. Then Lord Chaitanya chased after him and then just forced him. He said, what do you have there? No. He said, I want you to taste your prasadam. He says, no. This is not fit for you. I can. He says, what do you mean? And I forced, just grabbed that prasadam from him. He said, ah, this is the greatest prasadam I ever had. Wonderful prasadam. So like that, Raghunath Das, he used to bow down a fixed number of times every day. I forget, I don't know exactly the number, but maybe like 108 or 1,008 or something, you know, quite a significant amount of times. And he would do that as a, like we chant 16 rounds, he would also bow down. so many times just to remain humble. He was the epitome of humility. And then, of course, Ramananda Rai, he was perfect example of just completely not being agitated at all by sex desire. He would be training up the young girls how to dance for Lord Jagannath, and despite of intimate training of them, he would never become agitated at all, completely fixed in his constitutional position, sarupa upalabdhi, as the eternal servitor of the Lord. Hare Krishna. So like that, every devotee has a particular quality, even in Lord Chaitanya, in the past times. We see that. We see subsequently Narottam Das Thakur, he wrote a little song, which of course is not really sung as a bhajan, but it's like a poem more or less, a little song, where he was glorifying that Lord Chaitanya is himself the Lord, he's the source of so many spiritual energies. So some of these energies are engaged in publishing, writing different transcendental literatures, and some of them are engaged in distributing those literatures. And there is just like Rupa and Sanatan, they're engaged in writing the literatures, and Srinivas Acharya, he's distributing them. And Srinivas Acharya was the first book distributor in the movement of Lord Chaitanya. Up to that point, everyone was writing the books, but no one actually had taken them and saw and established them. And it was actually Srinivas Acharya who took the books and challenged the different pandits in the court of Birambir Vikram Shah, the king of Vishnupur. Of course, the books had been stolen, but nonetheless, he was establishing these books, and he actually converted that king into a pure Vaishnava. Later on, the king took initiation, also became known as Chaitanya Das, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Das. And his wife also took, the queen also took initiation. And in this way, the books were established as actually authoritative sources of spiritual understanding. So Narottam Thakur was also glorifying the difference of qualities, that how some were writing books and some were distributing books. Of course, in that way, Srila Prabhupada is unique, because everything, you can find almost all of the qualities. I can't think of any quality you can find. Never tried to. But every quality I try to find, I always find it in Prabhupada. It's so amazing. He wrote the books. Saw that they pushed that they got published. Personally went to Dainipan and kind of made their initial deals, and even with Macmillan, to see that his books were published, and then trained the devotees how to distribute them. Personally was distributing them, and when he was in Delhi himself. And that way, writing, publishing, distributing. Prabhupada was empowered by all the qualities. But of course, that's unique. Generally, a devotee has some qualities, maybe not all of the qualities, maybe all of the qualities in some part, but specifically one quality more. So that way, in devotional service, even if we can do one thing perfectly, whether it's writing or distributing books or just cooking for the deity or serving or cleaning or whatever it may, one particular service, if we can do it very nicely, actually that's our ticket to pure devotional service. That's all we have to do, is just even do one service perfectly. And of course, if we can do more, just like the nine practices of devotional service, the example is given of those nine different devotees, Hanuman and Parikshit and Sukhdev, you know that, how, and Maharaj Ambarish for the... Some devotees, just by doing one devotional service perfectly, they achieve liberation, or they achieve perfection of devotional service. And of course, Ambarish, he did self-surrender, which includes many devotional services, but some devotees may be expert in one or four or six or eight or all nine. But even one is enough. Even one is enough to take us to the perfectional platform. So that way we should try to not be like it. In the terms of devotional service, a jack of all, the nine, but at least we should try to be steady in a particular service, or steady if we're doing a little bit of everyone, that's all right also, but at least to be always steady, to actually be concentrated in an unbroken devotional service, as is described in the Bhagavatam. Savai pung sang paro dharmo yato bhaktir hokkaja Ahituki apratiyata yagatma supersedati the ahituki apratihata is unbroken. If we can keep the unbroken chain with just doing one service, well, that's all right also. Of course, so it may be difficult just to speak. Like if you're Parikshit Maharaj, you can just sit without sleeping, eating 7 day and night, just completely hearing, and then leave your body right afterwards. Well then, hearing, just by hearing, you can achieve perfection. But then if you also, in between hearing, you're going to do other things, well then you start doing other devotional service. And this way you fill up your day with the nine practices of devotional service, so that there's no gap. There's no space when you're doing something which is not connected to Krishna. It's a continuous meditation, continuous link with Krishna through devotional service. So what's wonderful in the present context is that Lord Chaitanya is giving out his mercy to the fallen souls. And that mercy is so inconceivable. Although Krishna has his plan that those who are Naradamas, who are the lowest of mankind and demons, and who are have their intelligence stolen by the material nature, and who are foolish like the asses, generally speaking, they never can understand Krishna, and they can never become liberated. We don't find such people generally achieve liberation. Still, Lord Chaitanya is such an intense, merciful incarnation, descent. But by His mercy, even these four classes of people find a hope to become delivered. Just like Lord Nityananda delivered Jagai Madai, who were definitely Naradamas, who were definitely the lowest of mankind. But by the mercy of Lord Nityananda, he was able to deliver them. So while Lord Chaitanya's mission is in this, his pastimes are still going on, this gives not only the greatest opportunity for all the Naradamas who are complete ignorance about their constitutional position. At the same time, it gives all of the devotees an opportunity to engage in this preaching activity, which itself is purifying. Just like even the four Kumaras, when they came to see Maharaj Prithu, and Maharaj Prithu received them, gave them a seat, bathed their feet, and did all the ceremonies, and then they ask so many wonderful questions. What's the purpose of life? What's the ultimate good that can be done for all mankind? So on and so forth. The Kumaras thanked him that by asking these questions, you are not only doing yourself a favor, but you're actually doing us a favor because you're giving us an opportunity to be able to explain these topics. Both the listener and the speaker become purified because both are fixed in the absolute. So this way, the opportunity that even, say, relatively neophyte people may be engaged in devotional preaching and actually taste the nectar of being an instrument in the hands of Krishna and thus become actually spiritually opulent, spiritually qualified, and become actually very fixed nishtha devotees in a very short time is also one of the special mercies of Lord Chaitanya, which even in India, before Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, was not emphasized or understood as deeply, I would say, that he actually broadcasted this particular aspect of preaching in the modern, recent history. He has kind of rejuvenated that which was existing during Lord Chaitanya's original pastimes and the pastimes of his immediate following acharyas like Narottam and other who were always engaged in this preaching nectar. Because originally, I mean, the immediate associates of Lord Chaitanya were, of course, many of them were eternal associates of Radharani and Krishna and the Vrindavan pastimes, and they were, some were there to assist Lord Chaitanya in his external pastimes, and some were there also to assist him in his internal realizations of pure love of Radha, Krishna, and Vrindavan. Immediately after that, then the acharyas who came, their main, because Lord Chaitanya left the world, their task was to actually establish the mission of Lord Chaitanya in its actual full preaching form. Just like Jiva Goswami and Narottam, Srinivas, Shyamananda Pandit, and so many others, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So now, again, in the modern context, because Lord Nityananda predicted that the movement of Lord Chaitanya would also go through a certain eclipse, a certain change, now we see there's like a whole renaissance of Lord Chaitanya's movement all over the world. And so now the need is to establish very strongly this whole mood of preaching and cooperation. And Prabhupada has actually brought this now into the whole international world context and has made it so easy for everyone to engage in preaching, even if a person doesn't know the philosophy very well. He can distribute the books, and of course Prabhupada wanted the people who distribute books should also know his philosophy, so while they're preaching and while they're reading, I know my personal experience was when I was distributing Back to Godheads in Canada before I went to India, that's all the books we had at that time. We didn't have big books or anything, just had the Back to Godhead. So then I would continuously, by preaching, giving out, to selling, trying to sell the Back to Godheads, I would find people would ask me questions which would force me to go back and read the books. I don't know nowadays if people ask questions, but I would imagine they still do. And that way I was forced, stimulated to always be reading and trying to understand the philosophy better and better in my initial days of sadhana by actually preaching. And by preaching, I found that Krishna would supply intelligence. The things that I had read seemed to then suddenly take a new form, and I was able to repeat those in a way which the person could actually comprehend by the mercy of Krishna and Prabhupada. So in this way, this whole preaching movement, which Lord Chaitanya started and which has been brought all over the world by Srila Prabhupada and is being continued by his followers, is actually the greatest opportunity to develop each individual's special devotional quality to its fullest, and to also not only enable one to develop himself, oneself, and to actually become an instrument in the hands of Krishna, but to be an instrument of giving mercy and see the actual development of and the welfare it's doing to other people right before your eyes. If some sincere soul comes forward, you give them the opportunity of linking up with Krishna. You give them the opportunity of doing some devotional service for the first time in maybe in their whole existence. How a little devotional service means a lot is exemplified in a type of a very little known pastime of one deity in India. There's a deity that, what's it called, the Tirumal deity?
Tirupati?
Not Tirupati, not Tirumal, it's like Pirumal. Something like that. Anyway, with South Indian names, it's a Vishnu deity, Krishna deity, and he's Narayana form. at the place where Mohini Murti gave out the nectar to the demigods. It's near 5 kilometers or 24 miles from Madurai, which is in the heart of the south of India, just right in the middle of South India. And there's where, in Madurai, Meenakshi, which is the deity of Mother Durga, and Sundaranandam, Sundarishwanam, the deity of Lord Shiva, there's a whole pastime where this Meenakshi married Lord Shiva, just to make a long story short. And during that time, Lord Vishnu gave Meenakshi in marriage, he was like the best man, or he was the one who gave her in marriage, or was like the best man. He was like officiating the whole ceremony of wedding Lord Shiva and Parvati in this particular pastime. So as a result, this particular deity every year comes during the festival when Meenakshi and Lord Shiva are married, since thousands of years. These deities are very, very ancient. Temples are gradually decay and they're rebuilt. The present day temples that are there now are literally thousands of years. There's also a very big Vishnu temple in the city of Madurai. I can tell you about the reception they gave me one time with elephants and coconuts and everything. It's wonderful, but that's another story. So this deity, some considerable time ago, I mean, I don't know if it was in Kali Yuga or Dwarpa Yuga or when, I mean, these deities are very old, was coming and came to the wedding and then was going back. On the way back, a dacoit, a robber, armed robber, attacked the party of the Brahmins that are carrying the deity. Now the deity was decorated to fill with diamonds and gold and everything. So now this dacoit, he didn't, you know, Krishna said, Jaitamang Prapadang Te Tang Satai Bajami. However you approach him, he'll reciprocate with you. So he, just like people will come up to our Prabhupada deities and then they look there and say, when's he gonna talk? I mean, in India, that happens all the time. People say, you know, he's really in samadhi. And they don't think at all that it's a deity. So this thief didn't at all think that this was a deity. And he just saw, you know, here's the person who's been carrying a palanquin and he's loaded with diamonds. He went up to him and said, you know, I want your jewels. Will you give me your jewels? And because he just, you know, went right up to the deity and started talking to him. And he was expecting, you know, he's talking. So the deity reciprocated. And so why do you want to steal from me? I'm just coming back from a wedding. It's an auspicious occasion. You don't want to steal from a person coming back from a wedding, do you? And the thief thought about it. He said, I don't really have any qualms about stealing from anybody, whether you're a wedding or whatever. I want your jewels. He said, no. He says, you're gonna fight or you're gonna give me the jewels? He says, oh, if you're determined to steal the jewels from me, then I won't fight. All right. You see, and then, so the for some reason the thief he took faith and well he's not going to fight. All right. So then he pulled his bag out and he said, "Will you just hold my spear while I load up the jewels?" And he handed his spear to the deity. And as soon as he gave the spear to the deity, who took the spear from him, he had given something to the deity. Right, even just loaning it, you know. He had actually done the act of actually giving something to the, handing it to the deity for whatever purpose. Because he did that little bit of devotional service, his whole Naradam attitude of just completely being, you know, not at all recognized, disappeared. And he got the Sukriti to understand that this was the deity of God. This was actually, God was right there. And immediately he became a devotee right on this, but he realized that he was just talking to God. And of course, the other Brahmin was completely amazed what was going on. And then, so that person bowed down, and you know, after that, he actually became a great saint. The deity is glorified for that pastime also. So in this way, I mean, what effect these people are getting by doing a little service? As long as whatever they give is, you know, they're getting literature, the money is being used for the service of the deity, that even they're getting agata sukriti, they get so much benefit in the future. So in this way, devotees are actually changing the destiny or the karma of the people. And the more that we can get devotees to preach and to help in bringing the people into more and more devotional services, into appreciating Krishna consciousness in a favorable way, that's doing the greatest welfare work. This is all by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada now. Srila Charyadeva is bringing more of these Bhagavatams to us also, for which we're very grateful. And this way, every devotee, whatever service he may be able to do, just try to do that in such a way to please Krishna, to bring people closer and closer to Krishna. That's the perfection. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I'd ask for questions. Maybe tonight we're going to have a darshan or something. You read the poem by Prabhupada, Worshipping Krishna in Vrindavan? Written in Bengali?
Not the one who wrote the Java.
No, he wrote this when he was still in Vrindavan. This I've translated, and then they were doing a purports of this in one poem by Bhaktisiddhanta to make a draft. Nice. Nitya Siddha Parshad Sab. Nitya Siddha Parshad Sab Radha Krishna Shmore. Tadir Shmoren Jivera Sharva Papa Hare. Anukaran Kori Jodi Shay Bhav Dhore. Maya Kovilito Hoya Shangshana Thore. Prachar Koroho Sada Jiva Gore Gore. Shuffle Hoybe Jivan Prachare Dware. Siddhaito Das Prabhu Dane Shikha. Koro Uche Shwari Namo Etar Dikha. That the eternally liberated associates of the Lord, they always remember, are in the remembrance of Radha and Krishna at every moment. And simply with the living entities, the conditioned souls, remember those eternally liberated associates, then they lose all their sinful reactions. They're so pure. So, if someone tries to imitate them, putting on a show as also being eternally liberated soul, like, because living just in Vrindavan or something like these Babas, you know, trying to say they're already Paramhamsas and so on. The Prabhupada said, Maya Kovalita Hoi Sangsana Thori, that actually they're all under the control of Maya, and they're not able to get delivered from the repetition of birth and death, what to speak of pure devotion. So then he says that all the conditioned souls should simply always perform preaching, prachar, door to door. And this way the life will become completely perfect by preaching activity. And he says that my master, Siddhaito Das, Siddhaito, Parshavanabhi, Daito, they was one name for Bhaktisiddhanta, that he has given this teaching. Loudly chant the holy name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. This is his initiation. One should loudly chant, I mean, broadcast the message everywhere. So this is Prabhupada before this, and some of the other verses criticize kind of the people taking shelter of the Dham who don't do any practical service, who just put on a big show and then don't preach. He complained how the Christian priests coming to Vrindavan and criticizing Krishna's pastimes. And here these so-called liberated souls, they don't even defend Krishna. So they could easily defend Krishna, they could protect his good name. Instead, because they're so exalted, they're not doing anything. Prabhupada, he didn't like that at all. He said they're Kanista Adhikaris. They're not at all advanced, don't say. So, in that context, he's saying, what is the actual position of the six Goswamis? Someone may say, well, they didn't preach. They didn't leave Vrindavan and preach, so therefore nobody should leave Vrindavan and preach, right? Anyone who leaves Vrindavan preaches is not very advanced, or something like that. But here Prabhupada was saying the difference was that because they were ordered by Lord Chaitanya to go there, they were eternal Nitya Parshas, Nitya Siddhas. So their being in Vrindavan, by their being there, everyone in the whole world gets purified just by remembering them. Plus, they also wrote and they did so many other things, but nonetheless, their position was so special. And these people, I mean, they may be Vaishnavas, but they can't claim that the whole world gets freed from their sin just because they remember them. They've not contributed anything really to Lord Chaitanya's movement, but yet they have this feeling that that the preachers are like low class and they're really up there. So, Prabhupada said by imitating them is actually simply another form of Maya, another form of illusion. That the real nectar is to preach to everyone, house to house, person to person, give them the message of Lord Chaitanya. That this was the gift of Bhakti Siddhanta, I was mentioning this morning, this contribution. That by broadly preaching the holy name, fame, and glory of the Lord, that is the real connection with Krishna. And then Prabhupada goes on. He says, Kirtane Ango Sudhu Nahi Dak Tol. Adhunek Darai Nahi Kirtane Rol. Hari Shevai Anukul Shakolei Madhav. Tri Jagatir Bhokta Hoya Akala Jato. Mayar Boi Bhava Jato Radio Shabdo. Kirtanera dvara sada koro taha stabdho. Maya kachkachi sab sangbade patro. Kirtan koraho tahi jagate sarvatra. Daktol means that the kirtan, the actual form of kirtan is not just to pound on a bunch of drums here and there, but and also it's not that just because some machine or recording or something is doing kirtan and that's kirtan either. That it has to be in connection with the Lord, to the service of the Lord. Anything that's in connection with the service of Madhav is transcendental. He said the proprietor and enjoyer of these three worlds is alone Yadava or Krishna. And he's saying all these professional kirtan singers broadcasting over the radio, it's all simply influence of Maya. And by real kirtan, by real glorification of the holy name, all this artificial chanting should be completely silenced, stopped, dead. He said all the Maya Kutch Kutchy, all the Maya gossip is in the newspapers. So with the kirtan, the glorification of the wonderful qualities of the Lord, all the world should be flooded or broadcasted everywhere through the newspapers, changed to actually glorify Krishna. Like that Srila Prabhupada was. Trying to encourage that everything should be used in the service of Krishna. And this is the mercy. This was written when he went to Vrindavan and say 10 years before he went to America, roughly. Srila Prabhupada wanted that people should preach the glories of Lord Krishna, but nobody had that vision. And when Prabhupada used to tell them that Lord Chaitanya wants us to be spread all over the world, then his godbrothers would say that, well, it doesn't really mean, I mean, when it says Prithvi, it means the whole, all the villages in India. How can it be spread outside India? It's not possible. Prabhupada said, no, when he says Prativi Day, it means the whole world. But then because they couldn't understand, so like that, Prabhupada had to go and show what Lord Chaitanya wanted. So that way, if we also keep up the faith in the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya, then by Prabhupada's mercy, we'll also be able to do wonders. We can't have a stereotyped idea, which in any way, or in any way limit the power, potency, and potential of Lord Chaitanya's movement. So maybe this is some of the nice poetry that Prabhupada's writing then, which should make into a little booklet.
How many verses are there altogether?
27. Each verse is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8. And Bhakti Siddhanta is the same. About 19.
It's a poem to Bhakti Siddhanta.
No. This is a poem which is worshipping Krishna and Vrindavan. And Prabhupada traced out from the beginning of the I'm now sitting here alone in Vrindavan. Please listen to me while I'm absorbed in my meditation. And he describes how his family members left him, how he's sitting there and they're laughing because he's left his family situation, his money, his everything. His, you know, because of his devotional service, his money depleted. So he said, they're all laughing at me. And he said, I'm sitting here and I'm laughing. He said, I'm laughing. They're laughing and I'm laughing. This is all these so-called the loved ones. Where are my mother and father? Where are they now? Where have they gone? Where are all the old uncles and aunts and everywhere? Where are they all gone?
Who? Mm-hmm. I think there was a little portion of that in the Lamrita, of that prayer.
I think.
The first, remember?
Vrindavan Bhajan.
Vrindavan Bhajan. Well, I'm changing Bhajan, it means Bhajan to Krishna, so it's, could be just worship of Krishna, but worship bhajan means it's really hard to translate the word bhajan. Bhajan. Worship means puja. Bhajan is actually more intense, more deep, where one's actually worshiping in a completely surrendered, absorbed mood with various types of services, not only.
So you said you had a lot of questions?
I have different questions.
I heard sometimes people in Vrindavan, they have a special relationship with Krishna, and they're not too, can't understand it. So they say we can't understand it, but when is it that they go back to God after this life? A lot of the souls are in Vrindavan.
Vrijabhasis, who understand their eternal servitude to relationship with Krishna, are above ordinary devotees, because even sometimes they may not be as strict, say, as other sadhana bhaktas, but because they've got some intimate relationship in terms of their being Vrijabhasis, I mean, they, a lot of them actually see themselves as servant of Krishna, and they're very connected that way. So that way, if a neophyte devotee comes and starts to criticize them, then it can be an offense. They may not be able to actually understand. And it's not so much the neophyte devotees, but it's like the karmis, they might not understand what's special. Or, you know, very neophyte or karmi, they may not understand. And they may criticize. Now, even the criticism might be, to some extent, just in some cases. If it's not their position. And that they're not able to see actually what is the good quality of that person. That person may be very, very attached to Krishna, but just due to the Kali Yuga is not following everything perfectly, but at the same time, in the ultimate issue is actually very much connected with Krishna. So that way Prabhupada said that generally one is supposed to go to the holy dham for 3 days. Because after 3 days the glitter wears off and you start finding fault with the dham vasis, and that can be detrimental to one's advancement. I think that's probably the rule that you're referring to.
What was Prabhupada saying there? Like they have to leave out Peter Burton, that those people are the dham, they're caught up by mind.
Who
can escape in this way?
Who?
In that poem, there's so much about that.
Who can escape? What I just said here?
Hmm.
Yeah, that I said, this is different. This is the people that go to Vrindavan and imitate the six Goswamis. Imitate liberated souls who are not actually on that level. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur put it another way, said that Madhavendra Puri was no doubt a great devotee, but he didn't put on any of his emotions. He wasn't putting on any show. Rather, he was trying to avoid public attention, but it was coming anyway. If someone tries to, he never cheated to put on any false show, or even, you know, maybe if someone else puts on some kind of show imitating Madhavendra Puri, it's not only, you know, bad taste, it's very offensive, actually. So that's the thing that's been criticized, not people that, in this particular sense, people that imitate the pure devotees. Not some that just a neophyte visits the Dharma and criticizes people born in the Dharma, or the Dharma itself. Prabhupada doesn't say they're not devotees, since they're Kanistadikars. Kanistadikars normally doesn't do liberation, emphasize the mission.
preach for maximum purification. Is that right?
Could you please describe to us a little bit about the special qualities and glories of Gopal Bhatta Goswami?
The time I went to South India, when he got to the Sri Ramana temple, Venkatraman, the head priest, the head pujari, requested that Lord Chaitanya stay there for 4 months for the rainy season. So at that time, so Gopal is the son of Venkat, and he was given the service of serving Lord Chaitanya, washing his clothes, bringing him prasad.
He was just a young boy then?
No, not particularly. The way I would have to guess that he would be in his 20s. But offhand, I can't say exactly. Might have been older. I get the impression that he's young, but not from the real. Definitely a little young, but not just that he's a little boy. He's already quite in control of his faculties. So he was serving like that. And one day he was meditating and how he was seeing Lord Chaitanya every day as a sannyasi, but how actually he was very unfortunate that he missed the chance to see Lord Chaitanya in his Navadvipa pastimes. And he was lamenting like that, that he, you know, missed it when he was with so many devotees, fixing kirtan party. Here he sees Lord Chaitanya was alone doing kirtan. It was, of course, very wonderful. And he was thinking like that. He kind of dozed off. It wasn't really dozing. I mean, it was like he actually fell into like type of samadhi in a dream state. And there, he saw Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya was in his Navadvipa Leela, and there was Lord Chaitanya, and there were the other devotees. Big kirtan was going on. He was overwhelmed, he was paying his obeisances and his vision. He was just overwhelmed with ecstasy. After a little while, Lord Chaitanya disappeared, and Gopal Bhatta suddenly woke up. And he became very, very filled with separation. Where is Lord Chaitanya? And he called out, "Where is Lord Chaitanya?" And he started running to find Lord Chaitanya. There in the distance, he saw Lord Chaitanya. He ran. And as he was running, he was crying because he was so eager to see Lord Chaitanya. And just as he was approaching Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya assumed the form of Krishna playing on the flute. And he saw that, he was immediately completely stunned, and he fell unconscious on the ground. And when he woke up, you know, when he came awake a few moments and regained his consciousness, he sort of looked up and saw there was Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya put his lotus feet on his head, told him to pack up his gear and head off to Vrindavan. He said, "Gopal, and then he went to Vrindavan and met the other Goswamis there. So that he stayed mainly in Vrindavan as far as I know. Wrote literatures and established the worship of Ramana. I forget. One of the main deities he established. See, who did Radharama? He did Radharama, maybe. I think he did Radharama. He did Radharama. He was worshipping 12 Shaligram Shilas, and then tying him up in a tree every night, and he was feeling separation that he could never do any dressing, swingar of the deities. So one day when he undied the shaligrams, there was 11 shaligrams in Radharama. One shaligram had manifested a deity for him. And Srinivas Acharya took initiation from him. Although Jivanath Jiva Goswami gave him teaching. That's the basic thing.
What literature did he write? Are we aware of that?
Well, he wrote the Satsriya Sanskar Dubika and the another book like that, Satkriya, two books about the rules and regulations of Vaishnav sanskaras and Satkriyas for Grihasthas and Brahmacharis and Sannyasis, and includes in it a complete, right from the Garbhodan Sanskara to the Namkaran, cutting the first hair, the whole everything. To the samadhi, he's taking sannyas. So he wrote that. It's not very big, it's just but so many. Then, between him and Sanatana Goswami, Hari Bhakti Vilas was written. Apparently, Sanatana Goswami started it and he finished it, something like that. So Sanatana Goswami got the credit for it, but then Prabhupada said that some of the Hari Bhakti Vilas was a little bit influenced by Smarta. That Gopal Bhatta was influenced in this way, that in there it says that best if your guru is a brahmana, that he should have these qualities, he should be good features. And like that gives so many materialistic qualifications. But of course, in the end of that chapter, it says, but, you know, disregarding all of the above, that the main qualification should be a pure devotee. If he's a pure devotee, nothing else matters. You know, but so because he put all these other things that confuses people, that was just by the, you know, just to kind of pacify the smartest, some of those things were there. But the actual pure devotional conclusion is also there. It's just that the other thing is there too, like the ordinary kind of more smarta idea is there, but then he transcends it. Apart from that, I think he wrote a couple other books, but offhand I can't say. He wrote a couple of books into my pastimes. Any other questions?
Ask a question, Hari Bhakti. Somebody always have so many questions. 10 locals for the question.
No, I was going to ask a question, but see if I remember. When our mind just goes away, how do we, I mean, the mantra is supposed to control the mind, but sometimes it seems like it's uncontrollable even though we chant.
It's not that the mantra controls the mind. It's the mantra purifies the mind. You have to bring back the mind by intelligence again and again to meditate on the mantra. And as you're meditating on the mantra, then that purifies the mind and makes it easier to control. The louder you chant the mantra, that has effect of also drawing the mind. But it's not that the mind itself, that the mantra itself is, you know, does everything. You have to bring it back. I think Prabhupada gave the example of, I heard somebody give a nice example of a lota creeper tied to a stick, goes up. Intelligence is like the stick and the mind's like the creeper. If you don't put it on the stick, it'll go all over the place. You have to keep it, the intelligence, keep making it think of Krishna. Arjuna said it's impossible even for him to think of Krishna always. He said he thinks it's easier to control the wind You see, so then Krishna said, well, my opinion is if someone practices and tries, then eventually you can control the mind. So it's not that just by a little chanting of Hare Krishna immediately the mind is going to completely come under control, but by repeatedly bringing it back again and again to the chanting, gradually it becomes purified and it will be able to control it. So everybody's tired, maybe we can start off tomorrow, then we'll be fresh for it.
We're not used to it.
Hmm?
We're not used to it.
I like this kind of
thing. Take what I
said.
You just hung your tongue here too?
Yeah, well,
I'm helping the devotees now by cooking a little bit.
Cooking? You cook some of those preparations tonight?
No, not tonight.
Who cooked tonight?
The mother.
The mothers.
Very nice.
Our bus is getting trained up now.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing better and better. So the beginning was a little rough for him. But just like you were saying, in a small center, everyone has to automatically take more responsibility, so it's a nice opportunity. He was hiding in Miami for 6 months, no one even knew where he was.
Oh, I was going to sign him, not already there.
Now he's here, he has to take a lot of responsibility.
Muy bien. Muy bueno. Está bien.
All glories to Srila Charyapada. Ki jai. Charyapada ki jai.